Welcome to Real Money Radio, the show that focuses on real people, real problems, and real solutions. Here's your host, certified financial planner, David Holland.
Welcome to the program, ladies and gentlemen. Excited to be with you. And we've got a great program lined up. In fact, there are a lot of great programs coming up on this program. We've got a lot of great topics to share with you. So let's dive right in. I've got one that really is going to be interesting for you. And I like to bring in powerful, intelligent experts to be on the program with me. And our guest today is fits that mold. Christine Benz is Director of Personal Finance for Morningstar. And if you don't know who Morningstar is, they are the juggernaut. They are the lion of investment research. And I've worked with them for many years. In fact, more than I will admit to. Christine, welcome to the program.
Dave, it's great to be here. And I will admit to being at Morningstar for 21 years. So I've had a long relationship with my company as well.
Well, that's funny because that's actually, I was trying to do the math in my head. That's we started working with Morningstar at the same time because I've been using Morningstar for probably 20, 22 years and using them to do great analysis. A very powerful tool. So Christine is with us. We're going to be talking about the success factors for retirement. And of course, Morningstar has been a tool, as I said. There was a couple of recent articles, six factors for retirement, and also error-proof portfolio, six asset allocation pitfalls to avoid. We've invited Christine to be on the program with us to help us with this. And of course, if you want to learn more about Morningstar, this is easy, morningstar.com. We'll get into a lot of things, but let me give a little bit more of a background on Christine, because why is she on the line with, why we asked her to be part of our program. She's done, as she's talked about, she'd been with Morningstar 21 years. She's co-authored and written quite a bit in different areas and has worked with various programs that they've offered at Morningstar. Bachelor's degree in political science and Russian Eastern European studies. That gives you certainly a global perspective, Christine.
It does. I studied Russian for about a decade. Wow. So I'm very interested in everything that's going on and the macroeconomy as well as just the global political scene. It's interesting times.
We'll have to have you back. Yeah, we'll have to have you back just to help us understand more of that Russia element. Well, let's dive in. So the articles that you had written articles and ones you had weighed in on that I thought were really interesting, and our listeners know that we talk about a lot of different financial subjects, including retirement on this program. I loved how you kind of break out the six success factors for retirement. And if we could, I want to go through those with you because it's a little different spin or a little different take. And I found it very interesting, your approach here. The first one that you had identified was a flexible retirement date.
Right. And just to take a step back, my idea in this article was to help people acknowledge that they won't get every single call right. So maybe they'll pick a stock that doesn't perform particularly well, or they'll mistime their sale of a mutual fund or whatever.
Sure.
It might be. But my overarching point was, if you can get some of these success factors working in your favor, your retirement portfolio will have a better shot at succeeding overall. So one thing that I've identified, and I'm sure you have in your practice as well, Dave, is that if people are willing to be a little bit flexible mm-hmm. about their retirement date, that can really improve their portfolio's longevity and sustainability. So if people are able to retire perhaps a little bit later than the traditional 65, maybe are continuing to work even part-time or in some capacity, that can really improve their portfolio's longevity because they won't be taking withdrawals from it for such a long period. They may be able to make additional contributions, and then they may also be able to push back their Social Security start date. And those things taken together can be very powerful in terms of making sure that that portfolio lasts, they don't run out of money.
You're right on it, Christine, because when you start pushing back or you're able to work a little longer, it really stacks up. The benefits are additive or even multiplicative because you get the benefit of not drawing that money out, and that money stays in the portfolio for how long? That's, you know, that 1 year that you don't draw on the portfolio, that chunk of money gets to be in there for what might be a 20 or 30 year retirement, and that gets to work that entire time versus if you had taken it out that 1 year earlier retirement.
Exactly. The one thing I always say, though, and I'm sure you're running into people like this a lot these days who say, my plan for retirement is that I'm going to keep on working. Hmm. And what I always say is that can't be your only plan because there might be something that gets in the way of that plan. So you might have a health issue, your spouse might mm-hmm. have a health issue, your parent might have a health issue, whatever, or for whatever reason you may get laid off or may not be able to continue working. So you can think about that as part of your strategy, but it can't be your sole strategy.
Yeah, life gets in the way of the best made plans.
That's right.
And you hit several that I would have mentioned, and that you and I are definitely reading a lot of the same and students of this, still of this industry and learning. And to your point about people coming in and what they, or what people want to do, Christine, I've had people come in. I had somebody just came in a couple days ago and he said, I want to retire at 60. I had somebody else that said, you know, I really love my job. Unfortunately, I got, it got outsourced. And so I had to take a pay cut, but I love my job and I want to keep doing it. So how do I, how can I continue to work and draw on my retirement assets? Kind of a little bit to supplement my income and hold off on Social Security. And of course, then you bring in the whole Social Security optimization component of how you file and when you file and how you draw those benefits, that all those things work together. But I love your point, which is flexibility with a well-structured financial plan. It should not be rigid. It should, you know, inherently, it needs to be flexible because you may find yourself retiring sooner or have the opportunity to wait. And anything you've structured, it needs to be flexible. In fact, I just, Christy, met with a couple that their clients, and they were kind of recounting when they came to us and when they had, and unfortunately for them, this is before we started working with them, but they had retired at the end of 2008.
Terrible timing.
And what ended up happening though, but you'll like, he was not able to continue to work. She was able to work another year. And because of that, she was going to stop, but then she said, well, no, hold on, I can stay longer. He went ahead and he couldn't put the car in reverse, but she was able to. And because of that, they were able to wait on drawing from all of those declined or reduced value assets.
That's terrific. And the other thing I think that people should keep in mind is it doesn't have to be working full time in your same job, especially if it's a job you hate. I think that that's never an advisable idea to urge someone, even if it makes sense from a financial standpoint, to stick it out in a job that they despise. But if you can maybe find some kind of a hybrid, maybe it's working part-time, maybe you're consulting in the industry where you used to work full-time, maybe you are working full-time in a job that you find much more enjoyable. There can be a happy ground if you don't have any interest in staying put in the job that you had.
Yeah, that's right on the money. And of course, looking at all the different pieces of your financial plan, and we'll grab a quick break and we'll come back and talk more with Christine. I want to get to Social Security because that's a huge one. And if you're just joining us, Christine Benz is with us. She is the Director of Personal Finance for Morningstar. The website is morningstar.com. Quick break. We'll be right back.
Retirement planning doesn't have to be hard, complicated, or stressful. It also doesn't have to be in a hurry or with sales pressure. Since starting Holland Financial in 1997, it has been David Holland's mission to help individuals and couples plan their futures with personalized financial planning. David puts himself in his clients' shoes and recommends products and services he would choose for himself or his family. To learn more about Holland Financial or to schedule a one-on-one consultation with David, call 671-PLAN or visit planstronger.com.
And welcome back. Christine Benz is on the line with me, Director of Personal Finance for Morningstar. She is the author of 30-Minute Money Solutions, a step-by-step guide to managing your finances, and also senior columnist for morningstar.com. the firm's website for individual investors. And of course, Christine, I use your advisor workstation, the souped-up version of your Morningstar research capabilities to analyze clients and prospective clients' portfolios. And we do a financial analysis. And I will confess, we do rely heavily on your advisor workstation to help us efficiently analyze portfolios and bring together their various accounts. And it's been a real asset to us. So thank you for Morningstar's great product.
Well, thank you, Dave. I do think that that X-ray functionality that we have, and it's in our advisor products as well as in our individual investor products, is a pretty unique thing. So I'm glad to hear that you find it useful in your practice as well.
Oh, yeah, it's a great tool. Okay, so next in our kind of a running through or walking through, and I kind of jumped right in there before the break with Christine. I was so excited to talk about these success factors because that's what we all want. We want a successful retirement, and I definitely want that for my clients. Next is a well-considered, and I like the way you put that, well-considered Social Security strategy. You know, this is the river that runs through the middle of many people's financial plan. For some people, they have some flexibility on when to take it. Some people don't. But
that's right.
For the ones that do have some flexibility, and again, back to your flexible working time horizon, having other assets, having, you know, some different choices, especially for married couples, this strategy about Social Security, there's so much underneath the hood here that we could spend 3 or 4 days and not cover all of it. I guess, what are some of your key thoughts about it, Christine, and how that can be part of the plan?
Well, certainly for individuals, especially if they think that they have longevity on their side. So if you have a lot of 90-year-olds in your family walking around, you'd want to think about simply delaying Social Security, certainly past 62, because you'll take a permanent haircut for taking Social Security right at age 62, but even past your full retirement age. So for every year that you delay past your full retirement age, which is currently, what, 76, you are able to pick up a roughly 8% increase in your benefit. So that's a substantial guaranteed rate of increase in the benefit. And there's no benefit for waiting past age 70, but if you can at least delay a couple of years past that full retirement age, you can pick up a nice bump up in your benefit. So that's one thing to keep in mind. For couples, it gets a little more complicated, but generally speaking, the higher earning spouse is the one who wants to delay. So the idea is that the spouse, the surviving spouse, will receive that spousal benefit, and it will be at the highest level if the higher-earning spouse has delayed. So there's a lot of stuff you can do here. I would say this is one area where if people aren't comfortable thinking through these scenarios or not comfortable with the different variations in strategy, this is an area where an advisor can help. Can add some benefit in terms of increasing your overall Social Security benefit.
No question. The options, there are a lot of different options that can be done. Just as we take advantage of your software and research capabilities with Morningstar, Christine, we also have software that we have purchased that allows us to run all these Social Security scenarios, the optimization, if you will. Should the higher wage earner go ahead and file for Social Security at 66, which is what a lot of people, of course, that's their normal retirement age, or should it be at another point? Should they file and do a restricted application, allow their spouse to draw off of their earning record, and then that spouse delay their own till 70? All of those various iterations can be run to figure out which one makes the most financial sense, and then you match that or compare that or consider that, as you say, consider that within the framework of the overall plan and say, you know what, I can work 2 more years. And, you know, if we do, after 2 more years, I can draw from this one account and then we can make this Social Security thing work the way we want it to, especially if we've got longevity. And we might be talking about $100,000 or more in today's dollars difference in Social Security benefits.
I think the bear market of 2008 got everyone a lot more interested in just how valuable a benefit Social Security is and what a big part of so many families' retirement plans it is.
Well, speaking of bear markets and people's experience with that brings us to the next point, which is one of the other success factors that Christine talks about, and that is having enough of a stock allocation. And I find this very interesting because the conventional wisdom is that, you know, when you move into retirement, now is the time to be more conservative, but you can be too conservative, and I think that's part of what you're speaking to.
That's right. There are these old rules of thumb out there. Some people say, well, 100 minus your age is maybe what you should have in stocks. So if you're 65, that would leave you with a 35% stock allocation. My view is that in a lot of cases, that's just too conservative. Unless you have an awful lot of wealth and you don't need to worry about growing your money, that too heavy bond and cash allocation just is not going to return enough. It might not even return enough to preserve your purchasing power. So,
well, and in this interest rate environment, as you know, Christine, it's very likely that you could be putting yourself in a position with a large fixed income bond and some of the other fixed income instruments. You could be putting yourself in a position to experience losses if interest rates do rise significantly.
Well, that's the other risk as well. So not only may you not be able to keep up with inflation with that too conservative cash and bond portfolio, but if you're taking too much interest rate sensitivity in that bond piece, you could be vulnerable if interest rates trend up. And I think it's a fairly safe bet that at least over the next couple of decades, interest rates will go up. So that bond piece could be vulnerable in an interest rate shock. That's not to say you don't want bonds in your portfolio.
Right.
I think you do need them to have diversification, have something that behaves differently from your equity portfolio, but you need to make sure that you have the stock piece there to provide that long-term growth potential. There will be short-term volatility, but the trade-off is that you do have higher long-term return potential.
Amen to that. In fact, I often quote Morningstar's research in this area, Christine, where you did the study on, your company did the study on long-term interest rates and bonds and looked at the 10-year maturity or duration bonds. And if we see a 1% increase in interest rates, that those bonds go down an average of 10%. For a lot of people, they don't realize that can happen. And it could be a rude awakening for somebody who's over-allocated to longer-term fixed income and bond positions.
That's right. My bigger concern these days is actually that people are venturing into some of the more credit-sensitive bond types.
Yeah.
So we've seen some enthusiasm for high-yield or junk bonds, bank loan investments, emerging markets bonds. Those are all fine niche bond categories, but they'll tend to behave like your stock portfolio. So you do need some high-quality bond exposure, but you just don't want to be taking a lot of interest rate risk with it.
Amen to that. That makes me a little nervous, and that's something that we talk about on a regular basis. Christine Benz, ladies and gentlemen, she is the Director of Personal Finance for Morningstar, and of course, Morningstar.com. There is gobs of information and good resources there to take advantage of. We'll grab a quick break, and we'll come back and continue our conversation and talk about a spending strategy. Yes, that is part of the equation and one of the success factors for retirement. Stay right there.
These are challenging times for investors. The stock market is volatile, with 10% drops a common historical occurrence. Is your portfolio prepared for such a correction? How about inflation? What's your plan for when a gallon of gas or gallon of milk costs $16? And what about interest rates? Did you know that a 10-year bond could drop 10% if interest rates rose just 1%? What's your plan for that? Holland Financial has answers to questions just like these and practical steps you can take to help mitigate these negative events. Call 671-PLAN or visit planstronger.com to schedule your one-on-one meeting with David Holland. Do you have financial questions you'd like answered on this show? Send them to questions@planstronger.com. You will remain anonymous.
And welcome back. Christine Benz is on the line with me, Director of Personal Finance for Morningstar, morningstar.com. Christine has worked as an analyst and editor for Morningstar since 1993. So we're glad to have her on the program. And we're going to turn our attention to some of the other success factors and that Christine has written about. The next one I alluded to before the break, say it ain't so. We got to control and be smart with the spending, right?
That's absolutely right. I think people focus so much on accumulation and making sure that their portfolio is as large as it can be coming into retirement, but you have to balance that with a reasonable withdrawal rate. So a lot of people have heard about the old 4% rule. I think that that is still viable in many cases, provided that someone has, say, a 60-40, a 60% stock, 40% bond portfolio. But the most successful retirees are willing to be a little bit flexible about that withdrawal rate. So they're not just taking a fixed dollar amount every year, but they're willing to maybe tighten their belts a little bit in the down markets, and that means that they could potentially take a little more when the market has performed very well.
That's perfect, because the last thing we want to do, one of the things that really can hurt people is when they're pulling heavily from a declining portfolio. You are putting the 747 into a nosedive.
Exactly right. I sometimes run into retirees who tell me that they're taking upwards of 5 or 6% of their portfolio a year, and that's even more dangerous if it is happening in a market when stocks are going down, because that means that less of your portfolio will be there to recover when the markets recover.
Well, and to avoid that, of course, then that's where we look to more stable, secure assets. If we do need to have a certain minimum amount, then we look for other ways of getting that income so we don't have to pull any more than we have to on that equity portfolio. And I think that's where that, again, I think one of the key messages that runs through a lot of what you've shared with us today, Christine, is the flexibility.
Exactly. Flexibility and diversification in the portfolio. So if someone is encountering that declining market, that as you say, they have that buffer, they have cash and potentially maybe short-term high-quality bonds that they can pull from.
Very good.
While the stock piece of the portfolio is in the dump.
That's how we do it. That's how we do it. And kind of related right to that is number five, the flexibility on your in-retirement living expenses. And that's what you were referring to about the belt tightening that you might have to do.
Absolutely. And I think also as folks get close to retirement, they can kind of think through how their spending might look different and how they can make some changes without really diminishing their quality of life. So one thing that I've found in my work is that many folks come into retirement with substantial wealth tied up in their home, and maybe the home is larger than is ideal for them. So if they are able to consider downsizing into a smaller home or maybe even relocating to a cheaper locale, they'll have a few benefits. One is that they get the proceeds from that home sale, whatever they don't spend on the new home, they can bring that into their retirement portfolio. That improves that portfolio's longevity, and potentially they can also reduce their ongoing outlays. Their property taxes might be lower. Their maintenance costs might be lower. So there are some side benefits in terms of cost savings on an ongoing basis if you're willing to consider downsizing or relocating. That's not for everyone. I know some people might say, we stayed in a reasonable or small-sized home throughout our working years, and we're going to stick with it in retirement. But I think it is one lever. People can look at other things as well. Maybe the couple where they've both retired have decided, we have two cars, but really we only need one. We tend to only use one of the cars most of the time. So there are things like that that you can look at. Just take a step back, and I think broadly about what things can we do without reducing our quality of life.
I like it. I think that's really smart. There are, as you alluded to earlier, Christine, there are a lot of rules of thumb out there, and there are kind of the quick drive-by, fly-by things that people might talk about, or we might say on television, or whatever the case may be. But you know, when it comes to all of this that we're talking about, it's really individualized. And I figured it out the other day, since starting my company in 97, I've done around 700 or so second opinions for people. And every person that's come in, their situations are different. Their needs are different, and all of this has to be done within the framework of an individualized analysis or assessment. But building the plan, it's what's right for that person, and maybe it's one car, maybe it's a smaller house, maybe it's doing something from a refinancing that lets you stay where you are. Lots of different options available in the marketplace.
That's right, and there are no one-size-fits-all answers, as you say. Some people might say, heck no, I'm not moving
no way.
To a smaller house. I want my kids to come visit me and stay with me. So it's not for everyone, but each person has to arrive at his or her own acceptable set of trade-offs.
Well, and speaking of trade-offs, brings us to our last point in the success factors that we'll be able to get to today, and that is what you call vigilance on portfolio costs. Now, I will tell you, I do use Morningstar a lot in this area, Christine, to do analysis of cost of portfolios, because it's so often people are paying more than they realize for the underlying investments.
That's right. No one's writing a check. That's why people tend to be very insensitive to these costs. They just come out of your accounts, and certainly it's easier to do things that way rather than writing a check to your financial services providers every month. But it does tend to make consumers somewhat insensitive about some of these costs.
Well, and they're
so
difficult.
You've got to watch them every step of the way. You've got to watch the fund costs.
Yep.
You've got to watch your own transaction costs.
Yep.
If you're paying an advisor, and that can be money well spent, but make sure you know what you're paying and how you're paying. And also pay attention to your tax costs.
And on the point of the fees themselves, let's just use the mutual funds for example. The fact that those costs are deducted inside through the fund, and it's done daily, the way they calculate it. It's very difficult for the investor to see that. So unless you take advantage of a tool like Morningstar to do that analysis, you just don't know. I did the other day, Christine, you'll like this. The other day, I did a calculation. I went in and did an average. And at the time when I did the calculation, there was something like 26,000 different funds that were through Morningstar. I was able to go in and basically I did an average, pushed the average button on my keyboard, and it was average cost was 1.4% for the average of the entire universe. But some people might be paying 1.5% or 2% and not even be aware of it.
That's right. So it does pay to check your funds cost. You can find this on your fund company's website. You can find it on Morningstar.com. People sometimes think, well, you know, 1.5%, that's a pretty small number. But compounded over many years, that really adds up to a sizable chunk of change, especially if you have a good amount of money invested. So I always say, just as a very broad rule of thumb, don't pay any more than 1% for an equity fund. I don't think it's necessary. And if you are owning any sorts of bond funds, you want to set the bar even lower than that. So I think ideally under 0.75% per year. Any more than that, you will be signing over a big chunk of your return. So you have to remember the drag these costs can have on your take-home return.
Amen, amen. You'll be pleased to hear this, Christine. We use the Morningstar, and we do our research, and we talk to fund companies, and we've got our portfolio cost on the for a growth portfolio between no load and ETFs. We've got it down to 0.5% for the cost of the raw materials, as we put it, for the funds and to build the portfolios. It's just no reason for us to leave any of that extra expense in there when we're working for our clients.
That sounds like a good strategy.
Excellent, excellent. Well, it's to be aware these costs add up, and people need to take advantage of that. Any final thoughts, Christine, for overall comments for our listeners about these successful strategies in retirement?
A lot of people are really overwhelmed in the current environment. You've got people coming into retirement without pensions. You've got this interest rate crisis, the war on savers, as it's been called. It's really helpful at a time like this to step back and think about, okay, what can I control? What do I not control at all, so I'm not going to worry about? I think the things that we've talked about today are things that people can control. So if you focus on those things, I think you can feel empowered. You can feel like, we can do this.
And that's really what it, yes, thank you. That's what it boils down to. We can do this, and you just got to be willing to take the time, spend some effort, and do some research. And if you choose to have an advisor help you, of course, do research and find somebody that can put your interest ahead of their own. And that's what it's all about. If you just joined us, great interview. Christine Benz, Director of Personal Finance for Morningstar. Christine, we will have you back and maybe talk about Russia and some other interesting topics.
Thanks, Dave.
All right. Thank you.
Today's edition of Real Money Radio has been brought to you by Holland Financial, conveniently located on Granada Boulevard in Ormond Beach. Could you benefit from a one-on-one confidential conversation with David Holland, or would you like a second opinion to make sure that you're on the right track? Call Holland Financial at 671-PLAN or visit us at planstronger.com to schedule your no-obligation consultation. David looks forward to discussing the financial issues that matter most to you. The host of Real Money Radio, David Holland, is a certified financial planner with over 20 years of experience. And because David provides advice to clients on a daily basis, his hyperactive compliance department wants us to tell you that David Holland is an investment advisor representative of Holland Advisory Services, a registered investment advisory firm. He offers insurance and annuity products through Holland Insurance Services. Commentary given during this radio program should not be considered investment, insurance, tax, or legal advice. Views expressed concerning specific securities are not an offer to buy or sell. Investment advice and planning services can only be given after an analysis of an individual situation and only where Holland Advisory Services is registered or exempt from registering. Real Money Radio is produced by Holland Productions.